May it please the court, Adam Mueller on behalf of Donald Pogue. I would like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal, and my attorney registration number is 42176. I'd like to focus today's argument on the first issue as it's presented in the opening brief, which is whether the state presented sufficient evidence to support a conviction for failure to cancel under 183412.5(1)(i). And the answer to that question is no. Mr. Pogue was charged with and convicted of failing to cancel his sex offender registration with the Adams County Sheriff's Department in violation of 183412.5(1)(i). Now that section prescribes, quote, the failure to complete a cancellation of registration form and file the form with the local law enforcement agency of the jurisdiction in which the person will, quote, no longer reside. Now the language of that plainly required the state to prove that Mr. Pogue no longer resided within the jurisdiction of the Adams County Sheriff's Department.
Mr. Mueller?
Yes.
Are you contesting that subsection 1 of the statute might define in certain circumstances an offense that's broader than the enumerated subsections by referencing the sections 1622?
2 points, Your Honor. First, it's our position that the offense is really defined in A through K, the subsections enumerated below. And as to that point, I think what makes that clear is that subsection A says failure to register in violation of Title 22 or Title 16, Article 22. And I think if A through K are just exemplars of ways to violate the statute and really don't have any force of their own, as the Attorney General contends, then A really doesn't make much sense because A pretty much incorporates by reference everything in Title 16, 22, which is also what subsection 1 does. So that's not much of an exemplar if it's just everything listed above.
Well, what do you do with the including but not limited to language?
Well, I think the more important language is the colon at the end as opposed to a period. I think if the statute were defining a criminal offense entirely within subsection 1, it would end with a period. And we probably wouldn't even have A through K. So I think the colon at the end is this is how someone might violate the failure to register statute. And I think you interpret it as everything in B through K are specific examples that basically isn't included within subsection A. Everything in A is everything not in subsections B through K. And I think that's the way to harmonize the statute and give effect to everything. But to your question, Your Honor, I think even if I'm wrong about that, I don't think that changes the outcome in this case. Because if A through K are exemplars, like maybe the theft statute, and you've got various ways to commit the crime, the state elected one of them in this case. And the charging document unambiguously charged a violation of subsection I. It uses the language of subsection I. It cites subsection I. It does not use the language of subsection 1. And it does not cite subsection 1.
So that was along the lines of my questions, is why couldn't we also analyze this case under 1622.108
4A? Well, I think that provision is not implicated in this case, given the way the state charged it. If the state had wanted to charge a violation of 1622.108(4)(a), which is the provision the Attorney General predominantly relies on, they might have charged a violation of subsection A of 183412.5(1), because that incorporates everything in basically Title 16, Article 22, and that would be the way to charge it. But here, they charged a very specific provision under 412.5, and that was provision I. And again, they use that language from the statute in the charging document. And were there any doubt about that? We filed a motion to elect her for a bill of particulars prior to trial, claiming that counts 1 and 3 didn't give us sufficient notice and implicated due process because it just charged violations of subsection 412.5(1)(a), which, as I said, incorporates pretty much everything in 1622. And in response, the district attorney said, actually, okay, Your Honor, what we're going to proceed under is subsection G for counts 1 and 3 and subsection I for counts 2 and 4. And that gave us the notice we wanted. And again, were there any doubt about that? At the argument for judgment of the motion of acquittal at the close of the prosecution's case, the trial court expressed some confusion about which subsection was charged under which count. And the attorney general spoke up and said, Your Honor, counts 1 and 3 charge a violation of subsection G, and counts 2 and 4 charge a violation of subsection I. That's the way it proceeded from the get-go. There was never any confusion about what was charged in this case. And I think that's clear because in our opening statement to the trial court, as to counts 2 or 4, we said, Your Honor, they have to prove that he no longer resides in Adams County, taking the language from the information, which alleges that, and taking the language from the statute. And we said, we think there's insufficient evidence. We made that argument in our opening. We made that argument at the motion for judgment of acquittal, and we made that argument in closing. The judge eventually didn't agree with us, which is why we're here, but it's clear that that's what the theory everyone was proceeding under at trial. And so I first would say that it does charge a criminal offense, and therefore the state was obligated to prove it. But even if it doesn't, I don't think that affects the outcome in this case because of the way the state elected to try the case.
Mr. Mueller, am I correct in understanding your argument to be that the state must charge an offense under 18.3.412.5 and may not charge an offense under 16.22.108.4a?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. If they want to rely on the obligations or the administrative or regulatory provisions under 16.22, they've got to charge the criminal offense under 18.3.412.5, and then the corresponding A through K. And as I said, B through K are specific, and as in this case, we had G and I. The G counts were dismissed at the motion for judgment of acquittal. And if B through K doesn't cover what the state thinks happened here, they've got A. And A incorporates by reference everything in 16.22. So as I said, counts 2 and 4 of the information charged under subsection I don't think there's any dispute about that. Those counts expressly include the phrase no longer reside. And in this case, it was no longer reside within the jurisdiction of the Adams County Sheriff's Department. And on appeal, the state doesn't contest that they didn't prove that Mr. Pogue left the jurisdiction of the Adams County Sheriff's Department. So I think for those reasons, this court should vacate the conviction. Turning to the state's primary argument on appeal, which we were just discussing a little bit, which is essentially that subsection 1 of 412.5 really creates and defines the criminal offense, but A through K are merely exemplars and don't have any force of their own. As I said, I disagree with that. I mean, I think there's some other ways to make sense of this. One way to think about it is that if I didn't charge a criminal offense, then what's the language will no longer reside doing there? I mean, under the Attorney General's reading, the language no longer reside has no meaning. There's no effect to that because the state can just fall back on an argument that 16.22.108.4a doesn't have similar requirement, and therefore we don't give effect to the language really in subsection I of 412.5. And I don't think that's the way the legislature would like the courts to interpret statutes. We've got to give effect to all the language in the statute. And here, we've got a more specific obligation under 412.5.1i that arguably doesn't exist under 16.22, but the specific has to trump the general. And that's a cardinal rule of statutory construction. And I think the court has to give effect to that language in order to give effect to the intent of the legislature.
What's your response to the variance argument, that it's not an insufficiency issue, it's really a variance issue?
I don't think there was a variance here, and this is why. This is my first response. Because he was charged under subsection I, that's what the information says, cite subsection I and quote subsection I. The trial court convicted him as charged. The trial court says, you're guilty, I find you guilty of counts. At first, the trial court says counts 3 and 4, and it's actually the DA who steps up and says, no, Your Honor, it's counts 2 and 4. So Mr. Pogue was charged with a crime, and he was convicted of the crime as charged. And that's the position we take on appeal, is that convicted of the crime he was charged with, the state was obligated to prove essential element of that crime, which was that he no longer resided in unincorporated Adams County, and the state, as I said, doesn't contest that. So that's why I don't think there's a variance. Assuming he was convicted of something other than what he was charged with, as I said in my brief, I think that would be a constructive amendment, not a variance. But again, I don't think that's the issue here because he was convicted as charged. Going back to my argument that subsection 1I is really what's operative and creates and defines the offense here, I think the record supports that not only looking at the statute, but also looking at the evidence that was received at trial. And I point you in particular to Exhibit 1, which is the registration form that Mr. Pogue filled out on January 10th, 2008, listing his address in Bennett, Colorado. And I cited this in my brief because page 3 of that exhibit lists additional duties that someone must comply with. And it clearly draws a distinction between changing your address and failing to cancel. And it says, you must change your address when you change your address, and you must deregister if you leave the jurisdiction. Deregister, cancel, meaning the same thing. And I think it's clear that even what the Sheriff's Department understood was that this duty arose only if Mr. Pogue left the jurisdiction.
So focusing on I, my understanding is that the defendant became homeless after being turned out of the house. So how does I, what's the people's burden as it relates to I in this homeless situation then?
Well, I think you have to look, I requires that you no longer reside in the jurisdiction. And so I think what that means is that the state must prove where he resided. And the way I think about this is really flip sides of the coin. You've got a change of address. If you leave your house and move to a new house within the same jurisdiction, you change your address. If you leave your house and move to a different jurisdiction, you cancel. And I admit that the homeless question is very difficult, and the statute, I don't think, quite clearly deals with this situation. But I don't really think that changes the state's burden. That might be a problem for the legislature to figure out how it's going to deal with homeless individuals. But the statute does define what it means to reside. And this court's decision in Griffin deals with that question. It defines residency as both an intent and physical occupation. And whether or not, Griffin is going up to the Supreme Court, Supreme Court granted cert on that recently, but whether or not Griffin was correctly decided isn't really an issue here. Because again, the state doesn't dispute that it failed to prove that he no longer resided in unincorporated Adams County, whatever reside means. You know, so they don't take issue with what the definition of residence is, excuse me. If there are no further questions, I'd like to reserve the remaining time for rebuttal.
Very well, Mr. Mueller.
May it please the court, my name is Ryan Crane. I represent the people in this case. My attorney registration number is 37842. Let me start out with subsection I and subsection A and how A through K relate to subsection 1 of what I'm going to refer to as the failure to register statute. That's 183412.5. Subsection 1 says, a person who's required to register under 1622, which is the registration scheme, and who fails to comply with any of the requirements under that article, including but not limited to any of the following acts specified below, commits the offense of failure to register. A says the failure to register pursuant to Article 22, Title 16. A means the failure to register at all. That's the only way that A makes any sense read with one. The defendant is saying that A is essentially a reiteration of subsection 1, and he's saying that because of that, it doesn't make sense to read it any other way. I think that reading really doesn't make any sense, and it's A that is, just like A through K, another example of a way to violate 1622. And so when it says, the following acts, A, a failure to register, it means the failure to ever to go in and register. I, on the other hand, which is what we're dealing with here, the failure to complete a cancellation of registration form and file the form with the local law enforcement agency of the jurisdiction in which the person will no longer reside. Now, there's been a lot of dispute over how to read I. I mentioned in my brief, I think there's two ways to read I, and I'm disputing that the defendant's reading of I is the only way to read it. I admit, well, in my view, it's poorly worded, but because of the way 1622.1084A is worded, the registration statute's discussion of cancellation forms, I think it makes the most sense to read I in a way that's in harmony with that provision. And what that means is reading it to say the gravamen of I is a failure to complete a cancellation of registration form and file the form with the local law enforcement agency. And when it's referring to of the jurisdiction in which the person will no longer reside, it's the jurisdiction in which the person will cease to reside in the address for which the person needs to be going in and filing the cancellation form.
Mr. Crane, if I may interject a question. Under your reading, then, could you explain then what happens if somebody moves from one address in Adams County to a different address in Adams County, then the person still has to file a cancellation of registration and then also re-register again with Adams County with the new address?
Well, I guess if I'm understanding the question correctly, the cancellation duty is really triggered by 1622.108.4a. I think, is an example of a way to violate 1622. Does that?
What I'm asking you is, yes, if somebody moves from Adams County to another place in Adams County, does that person have an obligation, in your view, to file a notice of cancellation of registration?
Absolutely.
So what is the purpose then of doing that if the person is then moving to another address in the same county or the same jurisdiction?
Well, I don't know what exactly the forms look like, the cancel form, the change of address form, but the language in the statute 1084A, 1622.1084A is very clear, and it requires the cancellation form even if someone lives in the same, well, it doesn't specify where. It places the duty on a person regardless of where they move to.
But what language are you referring to that you...
1622.1084A, and that's under the 2010 and previous version of the statute. It was changed this year. But what it says is anytime a person who is required to register and ceases to reside at an address, the person shall notify the local law enforcement agency of the jurisdiction in which said address is located by completing a written cancellation form. And so that's, to read I in the same way as that, I think they're both referring to the same cancellation form. Under the defendant's view, I is a different cancellation form, I guess, and then it would, that to me doesn't seem to be a reasonable reading of the statute.
Hey, counsel, what do you do with the language that says under I, requiring a sex offender to file a cancellation form with the law enforcement agency of the jurisdiction in which the person will no longer reside? I mean, how do you reconcile that without it becoming superfluous language?
Well, the reading of it that I'm advocating is that no longer reside means no longer, it's the jurisdiction in which the person will no longer reside at the address that the person has ceased to reside at. I don't think it's great wording, but I think it's the only way, I think it's a reasonable reading of it. In other words, Judge, I see you're looking down at it again. I just, in other words, will no longer reside doesn't modify jurisdiction. It's referring instead to the address at which, it's any jurisdiction where you cease to reside at an address is the jurisdiction where you're ceasing to reside for purposes of the cancellation form.
Well, Mr. Crane, let me ask you this. If you said that the statute could have been written more clearly, and that there are at least two interpretations of it, yours and Mr. Mueller's.
Yes.
Why then would we or should we adopt your interpretation rather than Mr. Mueller's, given the rule of lenity that applies at least sometimes in criminal cases?
Well, the rule of lenity applies when there's no other way there's no other reasonable interpretation, or at least where there's ambiguity in the statute. There's not ambiguity in the statute here, and the reason is subsection 1 of the failure to register statute very clearly specifies this is the offense, anything violating 1622, the following are acts which are possible violations of 1622. Even adopting the defendant's interpretation, this creates a variance in this case, and so that's why even if you don't adopt my interpretation of I, and I've gotten several questions so far, so I'm going to address if the court prefers the defendant's interpretation of I, what that leaves us with here is a simple variance that occurred at trial, and that would mean
have a quick, one more quick question about 4A.
Yes, absolutely.
Isn't that just a timing provision? Because it provides how much time you have to file the cancellation, whereas the other criminalized version in I talks about in which the person will no longer reside. Is that one way to reconcile those two statutes? Because otherwise, the only difference between the two would be just one has in which the person will no longer reside, and the other one doesn't have that reference to the jurisdiction.
You're talking about comparing 4A and 1622 to
right. Is there any difference between the two other than just one requires the no longer will reside and the other one does not have that language?
Well, 4A is a part of the regulatory scheme, and so it's the more complete, it's laying out this is the duty, and it's a lot more thorough than I. I, in my view, is sort of a shorthand reference back to a failure to do a cancellation form when you cease to reside in an address. And so that's the reason it's just one. All of these acts described in A through K are sort of shorthand references to violations that are more fully explained in the regulatory scheme itself, 1622. I do believe the language is different. I agree with that.
Let's assume then that we're buying the defendant's version of I. Could you explain why it's a simple variance as opposed to a constructive amendment?
Yes, it's a simple variance because under a constructive amendment, a person is charged with an offense and then convicted of a different offense of which he had no notice because he wasn't charged with it and it wasn't in the information. Here, the defendant was charged with and convicted of the failure to register statute 18.3.412.5, specifically subsection 1, and that's stating anything that violates 1622 is a failure to register and it's a crime. Because subsection 1 is very clear that A through K are examples of violations, I is essentially the prosecution making a factual allegation that was in the information, wasn't necessary to be charged to prove a crime, but nevertheless was an allegation that was made. The defendant then at trial, which is what happens when a variance occurs, is the facts proved something different than what was alleged. Non-essential facts to the completion of a crime, but facts nonetheless that were alleged. And so it's the same crime that he was charged with and that he was convicted of. At worst, under the defendant's reading, it's a simple variance because there were acts alleged that were not proved at trial.
Did your argument depend on us construing those A through, I guess, K as examples rather than defined offenses?
I think so, because if you read A through K as separate elements of the crime, first of all, I don't think that's a reasonable reading of the statute. But if we read it that way, then presumably each one of those defines different elements, A through K. And so I think it's still probably the same offense, but because he was charged under I, his argument is a sufficiency argument. And so if, you know, depending on the wording of the statute, honestly, I haven't looked at if you read those as separate crimes as whether it would still be a variance or a constructive amendment. I think certainly arguably because 18.3.412.5 subsection 1 is the crime, A through K are examples, and even if they are defining different crimes, they're all the failure to register, and so it's still in that case defining something that didn't have to be defined in order to create a crime.
Your view, is it possible to read subsection 1 as defining the crime in a broad manner so that any failure to comply with Article 22 of Title 16 would be an offense, but also to provide specific examples or manners of committing the crime so that you have a broadly defined crime followed by subparts that are specific definitions of the crime instead of just examples?
No, I don't think that's possible, and that's because it says including but not limited to any of the following acts. And so it's saying these are acts which would violate 1622, but it's not saying that these are acts which are not covered under 1622. I think everything listed in A through K is covered under 1622 already.
All right, but what I'm saying is that in case there's something that they didn't list in A through K that violates 1622, that might also be an offense, but it would just be a violation of one.
Oh, sorry.
Not necessarily A through K.
Yes, I agree. Absolutely.
So I want to focus on something that you said a minute ago. You said they charged and they brought the claim, the case under I.
Yes, sir.
And that takes me to the question of elections.
Mm-hmm.
Did they not do away or forego with A voluntarily, and therefore the Title 16 argument, by saying we're going under that we're going under G and I only?
Well, it's my view that this was an election, if we're going to read it that way, it was an election of factual allegations. It wasn't an election as to a different crime. If anything, it was an election of something having to do with a cancellation form. And if we're going to read I under defendant's interpretation, then we're saying the prosecution essentially said, oh, we're talking about the cancellation form. We're going to put I in there and say that's what we're charging with. Because of the language of I, under the defendant's reading, I has the language of also saying it applies, you failed to file this cancellation form when you moved out of the jurisdiction. And they didn't prove out of the jurisdiction. No one knew where he resided afterwards. He didn't tell the police, he didn't tell anyone, and he didn't testify to it. And so it wasn't an election as to a different criminal offense. It was an allegation of specific acts and of a specific type of violation under 1622, which is the cancellation form provision in 108-4A. Does that answer the question?
So you weren't putting the defense on notice that this is the case that we intend to prove, G and I, and then the district court threw out G on a directed verdict, and so you were left with I, and you didn't have a sufficiency of the evidence to prove I?
Well, no, it's not a sufficiency claim, because it does not define the elements of a criminal offense. By charging 1622, by charging the failure to register statute to begin with, that was an allegation of a crime. The bill of particulars that was filed made a factual allegation to help put the defendant on notice as to what specifically he was being alleged to have done. He was being alleged to not have filed a cancellation form. The extra language about after leaving the jurisdiction or whatever, that was not required to prove a violation of 1622 or even to prove a failure to file a cancellation form as required.
But how would the defendant know that if the defendant read subsection I?
Well, under the view that, I very clearly is an example of an act that violates 1622. It doesn't define criminal element.
I understand what your argument is in that regard, Mr. Crane, but what I'm asking is if you could put your shoes in the put yourself in the shoes of the defense counsel or the defendant in this case, mm-hmm. and you saw that there were the bill in particular is focused on subsection I, wouldn't you say, well, this refers to not leaving the jurisdiction, and then say, okay, that's something that the prosecution would have to prove, even though under other circumstances it might not have to prove that?
I don't think that's a problem in this case. The reason is, my time is up, but...
Well, go ahead and finish your sentence.
Sure, thank you. The language of I is clear. The allegation referred back to the cancellation requirement, and defense counsel in this case was dealing with a factual allegation that didn't have to be proved.
Thank you, Mr. Crane.
Thank you,
Judge. Miller, you have just over 3 minutes left.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to start where you finished, Your Honor, and talk about the election, and I think that is crucial in this case. Because even if I'm wrong about the statutory interpretation question, I think the election is pretty determinative. As I said, the information charges unambiguously I, and after the motion to elect her for a bill of particulars, the prosecutor reaffirms it's I, and it says will no longer reside. And I think it's clearly relied on that. Our entire defense as to counts 2 and 4 was the state doesn't have sufficient evidence to show that he left the jurisdiction of the Adams County Sheriff's Department. We say it in the opening, we say it at the motion for directed verdict, and we say it again in closing, and we're pressing it here again on appeal, and that's because we relied both on the unambiguous statement in the information and the prosecutor's representation at the pretrial motion with the motion to elect. But as to the statutory interpretation question, I think subsection I does create and define a criminal offense, and in my brief, I cited the model jury instructions, and in a footnote in the reply brief, I give the link to the Supreme Court's website since it's not in published form, but the relevant instruction, it's cited on, I think it's page 3 of my reply brief, clearly lays out the jurisdiction in which you will no longer reside as an element of the offense. It's the fourth element listed in the model instruction.
And I would disagree with the Attorney General's interpretation that will no longer reside doesn't modify jurisdiction in subsection I. I think it does. It immediately follows the word jurisdiction, and I don't think there's any other way to read the statute except the way we've proposed. But again, assuming I'm wrong and the Attorney General's argument is a reasonable alternative, I don't think it is, but assuming it is, I think the rule of lenity comes into play here, particularly given the defense we pressed as to counts 2 and 4, which was they can't prove that he no longer resided within the jurisdiction of the Adams County Sheriff's Department. And my final point would be as to what happens when someone moves from one address in Adams County to a new address in Adams County. I think the person files a change of address form. And I think necessarily the Adams County Sheriff's Department knows, okay, he's changed his address. He no longer resides at the old address, he resides at the new. And he doesn't have to cancel at the same time because that's an entirely duplicative obligation. It only makes sense, I think, to think of these things as mutually exclusive flip sides of the coin. You stay in the jurisdiction, you change your address, you leave the jurisdiction, you cancel your registration. Unless there are any other questions, we would respectfully ask that this court vacate the conviction.
Thank you, Mr. Mueller. Thank you again, Mr. Crane. We appreciate your excellent arguments this afternoon. The case will stand submitted and a written opinion will issue in due course.